We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
1-2 from Stratton. Hoskins swings, pulls one down to the left field corner. That's that short area. Reynolds looks, and it's gone. Right down the line, Reese Hoskins pokes a home run to put the Phillies ahead for the first time today, 2-1 in the 11th.
The song playing right now is one of my favorites and very appropriate for what you just heard, courtesy of course, 93.7 The Fan, your Pirates flagship, and Joe Block with the call there. It's a perfect song to back that Reese Hoskins game-winning home run because there's such a sense of foreboding about the whole enterprise. Listen to that. If you know that song at all, you know it's a very, almost an ominous song, right? And that's what it felt like watching that ball or listening to that ball go out of the yard yesterday and seeing the Pirates drop their second of a three-game set with the Phillies to fall 5.5 back in the wild card with a whole host of teams to leap over and 7.5 back in the NL Central. That's what's on tap today, and it's brought to you by Fatheads 15 Packs, now available in Sunshine, Daydream, and Bumbleberry. Andrew Filippone is off, and I suspect is having a good old time doing whatever it is that he is doing. I'm back, and it feels, I'll tell you this, I made a conscious effort. First vacation with a baby, with a son, with my offspring. Last vacation before a second dog was added to the mix. More on that later. And I took a trip to one of my favorite places, to one of our favorite little beaches that we like to go to down south. Alex and I and their family and some of her family as well. And I made a conscious effort to try and divest myself from sports, right? I shut it all down. No freelance stuff, no nothing. Twitter app, I think it got opened one time, and it was a buddy of mine asking me to retweet a story he had written for a publication. I said, okay, I got you. A couple people DMing me, not realizing that the rule of first rule of vacation for me is you don't do anything on vacation. And this year, I took it to the extreme, right? But by yesterday, I was back and in the saddle and paying pretty close attention and feeling that familiar pit in the stomach when I was taking stock of the Pittsburgh Pirates. It hurt, man. It hurt to watch that game because it represented the, what felt like the final gut punch. You ever watch a boxing match and you just see a guy's will crumble after he gets hit with one, it could be a barrage, or it could be a long time in. Back in the old days, it would be the championship rounds. It'd be the 13th, 14th, 15th rounds. Now it'd be the 10th, 11th, and 12th. And you see somebody, a game challenger, for example, somebody not expected to be in the fight, and their resolve just crumbles. It's a reason why an underdog story is an underdog story. That underdog isn't supposed to surmount all of that. The Pirates were an underdog story. They weren't supposed to be close to the division lead at the All-Star break. And it felt like yesterday, Hoskins' home run, combined with what happened in the previous half inning, mind you, with to sack bunt or not to sack bunt, that is the question. It felt like that was a body blow that has the Pirates, if not down and out, certainly leaning against the ropes. And you're wondering if their corner, Neil Huntington in this case, who's got that trade deadline, only one of them this year, looming 9 days in the distance, and it's not very far away. Those days go by quickly, I can tell you, from being on vacation. They get here fast. Life comes at you fast. The Pirates are on the ropes. The Pirates are bleeding internally a little bit. The Pirates lost their mouthpiece. And it's up to Neil Huntington to decide, sort of symbolically or otherwise, whether he wants to throw in the towel. whether he's calling it. He doesn't want his team to take any more punishment. Yesterday felt like a, if not a watershed game, close to it. If not, I saw people, I went back onto Twitter yesterday. By the way, my mental health never better being away from Twitter. That probably tells me something for the long term. I went back onto Twitter, though, because I actually watched the game without it. And in the aftermath, as soon as the game ended, I said, all right, what are people saying? And you know what I got a lot of? And I'm talking about from like the diehard Pirates fans that I follow. The people who are much more predisposed to be glass half full types than anything. I sensed a lot. I didn't sense it. It was there in plain English. Well, turn out the light. I think that's it. 2-7 looks a lot different than 3-6. The same way 3-6 looks a lot different than, say, 5-4. It's a massive gulf, obviously. If the Pirates, say, win the game where Marte ties it the first game out of the break against the Cubs, where he ties it with a 3-run homer and they turn that all around on Chicago. If my memory's hazy on which actual game of the series it was, don't sue me. If they win that game and they win yesterday's game because they get it done in the 10th, at the very least, you're 4-5 and you've been in sort of water treading mode. It felt like yesterday, though, body blows were being thrown and one hit the Pirates kind of right under the rib cage. They're scuffling and the getting swept in Chicago is bad enough. The 1-5 out of the gate's bad. And it felt like a gut punch. And here's the other thing. I said that I saw a lot of people saying, hey, this might be it for these guys, and being very pessimistic and being very dour about things. What else I saw was a discussion about the merits or lack thereof of Clint Hurdle's sacrifice bunt. And I feel like that was a microcosm for how Pirates fans are feeling right now. Or maybe it said more for the fact that it was happening than anything on the field could. And here's what it went down like. You have Newman bunt. It gets the runner over, and then Reynolds strikes out, and then Marte ends the inning. And then Hoskins functionally ends the game the next inning. And Colin Moran, you know, looking at a pitch, etc. We all know where that went. And people were arguing, did Clint Hurdle make the right call to sacrifice bunt? I saw plenty of it on either side of the aisle. I saw actually more support for the concept, for the thought of it, than I thought I would. I follow a pretty sabermetric crowd, and I saw mostly people saying, good call by Clint, I liked it. I saw some dissenting views, but here's the point. This is what matters here. If you're a team that's just in a better situation, that feels irrelevant, doesn't it? Even if you lose the game, mind you. If you're a team that has come out of the break winning a handful of games, and at worst, treading water in the divisional race, which is the one that matters here, that's probably, it's a point of annoyance, but nothing more. It's a subjective debate about the merits of a play that's been executed for as long as baseball has been played, and that's where it ends. The fact that it was such a vociferous back and forth, the fact that it was something that people tied themselves, sort of understandably, I guess, in knots over, is the problem. If a better team has that happen to them, if a good team, like an objectively good baseball club, has that happen, and the Pirates' record suggests they are not that. They are mediocre at best. It's probably not a big deal because they've probably won a bunch more games along the way to get to this point so that it's not really, it's a hiccup. It's something that if you're in a tightly contested race, maybe people file away and say, hey, lost the division by a game. Remember that one? How'd that go? And maybe call it back like that. It doesn't become, in the moment, though, a point of major contention, I think, unless people know that it's dire straits right now for these guys. That the situation is very critical. You wouldn't have people having that argument, I think, if things were going better. And this is where, and this is kind of how it extends to now the series that starts tonight with St. Louis. This Phillies 1-3 series, their 2-7 start post All-Star break, was, I think, the death knell for them unless they do one thing. Sweep the Cardinals. That's your only shot. You have to rip off another long winning streak. We know what they did last year surrounding the All-Star break with that winning streak. We know what it precipitated. But for this team to crawl off the ropes or get off the ropes and start being taken seriously, they've got to start connecting with punches in bunches. And nothing I've really seen suggests that they'll be able to do that. Look at where the Cubs are. Look at them. 50, that's the one that matters. In terms of, like, are you selling? Are you buying? Are you whatever? Are you a serious contender? The Cubs are the team that matters. And they're 54-45. 7.5 ahead. It feels like a daunting task. And, excuse me, managed to come back from the beach with a cold. The Pirates will have some chances. They'll have this run against the Cardinals where they're going to be able to try to make up some ground here in a four-game set. But if you don't sweep them, if you split, even if you take 3 of 4, I don't think it's good enough because you took so many punches the first 9 games. Anything but a sweep muddies the waters, I think. 2-2 doesn't do anything. That's negative. 3-1, you start to say, okay, 48-9-53, maybe we were in this. Nah. You've got to sweep them. And you've got to hope other good things start happening for you relative to other teams in the division. It felt like yesterday, the Pirates didn't get knocked. If this was a Rocky movie, you didn't have those cheesy close-ups of Rocky not throwing in the towel with his goofy Hugo Boss sweatshirt in Rocky IV. You didn't quite have that, but it's at the part where the trainer is like, come on, don't let him hit you, and a mouthpiece flies out. I come back from vacation, I tried to ignore sports, and that's what happened. I guess blame me, if you really want to. Coming up, I do have a little vacation thing to talk with you about. I just knocked my mic skirt off, Jermichael. Real rusty here. Without Filippone, I'm adrift. I have a vacation confession, and it's more of like an announcement that my progression into one phase of life has continued at an even faster rate than I ever thought possible. I'm going to explain to you what that is, and then if you're the common man, if you're like me, an average Joe, or an average Chris, or an average Jermichael Finley, who's anything but average because he spent many years in the NFL as a tight end before coming to produce this show, if you're an average guy, I think somebody in the sports world won one for you this weekend. And in about 25 minutes, I'm going to tell you who that was and why I appreciated it so much. Vacation confession time coming up next for me. The time is 2:16, and it's brought to you by Goodrich and Geist. It's the PM team on the Fan. Make sure you text us on the Edgar Snyder and Associates Fan text line. Edgar Snyder and Associates reminds you to text responsibly. That's 412-928-9370. And I want you to do something else for me, all right? I want you to follow us on Twitter, dagnabbit. At 93.7 The Fan. That's driven by Shorkey Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram locations, North Huntington and the North Hills. If you'll indulge me. I got some vacation. I guess they're is it vacation confessional? I have nothing to confess. It's more like vacation realization. Confessional would imply I did something wrong, which I did not. I felt like I was as good of a father and husband as I am capable of being. You know, I'll tell you this much. I tried to entertain the baby as much as I could. I did not freak out when the baby ate sand. And let me tell you something right now. That child has a couple of my traits. He has a much larger than normal head, does little Lennox, and he likes to like eat things like sand. Like, I'm trying to think of something I would have eaten as a kid where everyone's just staring at you going, what are you doing? Like, are you okay? Think about what sand tastes like when you've gotten a mouthful of sand at the beach. Now imagine being a baby and wanting to eat it. Anyway. Things happen on this vacation that I need to quickly share. One is, and listen, I talk about beer a lot, and you know I love me fatheads, the Bumbleberries, the Sunshine Daydreams, the things of that nature, and they're in cans now. You hear me talk about this how often? Like, all the time? The start of the show is brought to you by 15 packs of Sunshine Daydream and Bumbleberry. Do you want to know how many beers I actually drank on vacation? So I was gone for a full 7, you know, what amounts to a 7-day week. Like 10. 10. That's it. That's the list. 10. That's less than two a day. I'm not even like counting. There was like a seltzer thrown in there, a hard seltzer just to change it up. 10. I counted because it became evident very early on that this was not going to be my vacation anymore. And that's when the realization hit me. The other thing that happened is this. So I think you're a guy, you think like, all right, I'm Mr. Vacation, I'm going to pound some beers, yeah. Even if you're married, if you don't have kids, you might even be married with a dog like we were for a couple of years. And you say, hey, I'm going to go down to the beach, dog will be fine, blah, blah, blah. You're a tough guy. And then what actually happens is you have a child, the apple of your eye, one of many reasons to get up in the morning, the biggest one. Kid you're so proud of, you're thrilled, you don't want him to grow up too fast, but you're thrilled with every milestone, and you turn into everything you said as like a 27-year-old, oh, no, 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 that won't be me, I'll be cool dad. Oh, no, 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 was not cool dad. I was doting dad. I was what do you need, honey, dad. I was, yeah, I'll pick up the baby, sure. No, 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 he looks fine. You know what else I became? And a big shout out to my guy, Mike Engel, who's the GM. You hear me talk about it a lot. Shorkey North Hills, Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram. Mike hooked it up for the trip. I needed to become a van dad. I did. There was no like swallowing of pride here because he put me in a Chrysler Pacifica for this trip, right? And awesome van. Awesome. What do you call it, fellow dads out there? I'm speaking directly to you. Old dads, young dads, first-time dads, second-time dads. What do you call it when you're in a van, something as a maybe younger man you never envisioned you'd be driving, and you're not only sitting in there humming along to, like, God knows what on the radio, but you're going, damn, I'm really glad I have this van. This van rules. This van saved the trip. Because that's what happened to me. I drank Lent beer invasion. I rolled over the moon to have a van. Something happened, like, you know how a caterpillar goes in and then comes out of the cocoon and it's a wonderful butterfly? That's me. All I need is those white Nike Air Monarchs and I'm good, baby. I'm wearing the socks halfway up the shins. We're talking about, like, flossing regular. Well, that's gross if you don't do that. You know what I mean, though. We're thinking about, like, oh, listen. Oh, you know what else I did? I grilled with charcoal. The gas grill there wasn't working. They had a charcoal grill as a replacement. I said, don't you guys worry. Dad's got this. I don't know what happened to me. But if I went into the cocoon before this vacation, you know, thinking, hey, you are hip-happening dad in 2019, I rolled out of this vacation one step away from jorts and one of those cheesy bar t-shirts from the shore that has like a vaguely dirty double entendre name. Or like a Bill's Roadkill Cafe shirt away from full-on dadness. That's what happened. I just thought I would share that. Speaking of dadness, you know what else I did? I got up early to watch golf. Because who wouldn't? Oh, the most dad thing I did was get up very excitedly on what I thought was Thursday morning and flip on to where I knew the Open Championship would be. Only to realize that it was Wednesday. And bitterly disappointed, like, slink the remote over to Alex and say, here, before you go to the beach, you can watch whatever you want. I'm good. Speaking of golf, I think a victory was struck for the common man this weekend. I think the dads out there in the audience, or the guys who maybe let the paunch go a little bit, the guys who aren't in the perfect shape, who maybe rock the traditional dad bod, had an inspiring win for them. And I'm going to tell you all about it coming up next on the PM Team. Something really cool that we're doing here on the PM Team, and you can join us for it. It's the Primanti Brothers World Tour. Okay, Chris, tell me about this. Well, when you travel the world for real, you need a passport. So you can grab your passport at any of the locations when the PM Team is present, and you will know all about it well in advance every time. You get it stamped at least four locations for your chance to win a trip to Florida. Like, not down the street, like, no, Florida, where it's nice all year. Where when you're freezing your cojones off in January, somebody's on the 14th hole at a golf course going, boy, chilly one today, only 72. Florida. So you can visit 93.7 The Fan's contest page for the dates, locations, all the details on this. The Primanti Brothers World Tour. First one was up on Route 8 in Hampton, or Allison Park if you're going to get technical. And had a lot of fun. And had a ton of people show up for this. So make sure you get out there. It's a good time. I'll tell you what. I think most of you know, because of my borderline insane insistence that used to drive Starkey up the wall and down again, that he referred to it as the Open Championship, preferably with a slight British lilt, that the Open Championship is my favorite golf tournament of the year. I love it more than the weird vibe that the Masters gives off, almost cult-like. I love it even more than the U.S. Open, where the course is usually set up to be as penalizing and as demanding as possible. And I love it more than the PGA, which practically isn't a major, except for the fact that it is, and they finally moved it till before the Open Championship, so it could just get slotted in there. You play it. Okay, it's done. Yay. Good. Wonderful. Sayonara onto the U.S. Open. Right? Nice little decision there. Finally. So I love the Open Championship. I just told you that I dadded it up by getting the first day wrong, being so excited in the way that dads are on vacation to watch golf, live golf at 8 in the morning, that I woke up a day early thinking, oh boy, first round, who's taking an early lead, yay. So I love it. I think my bona fides are established here. I really like the Open Championship. And if you are like me, and you are a guy who goes out there, and maybe you're like me and you can hit the ball pretty far off the tee. Maybe not 335. Maybe once in a blue moon, 325, you get it out there. Maybe you're throwing it out there at 290 to 300 with regularity and you're still shooting in the mid to high 80s. That's me. Guilty. And maybe, and this is the most important thing, you're trying to stay in shape, or maybe you're not even trying that hard. And you're looking more with more happiness towards the 19th hole than any of the 18 that precede it. You're thinking about that first post-round bev. Shane Lowry won one for you yesterday. Did you see? I mean, first of all, he played unbelievable golf. He was phenomenal. And it was, I think like most golf fans, even though I love the U.S. Open and I love the Open because both of them can wreak havoc with scores. If the weather's up at the Open, guys have no chance. If the U.S. Open course, if they decide to just set it up in a stupid way, guys are going to shoot ridiculous numbers. Like, I took pride as a Pittsburgher in Oakmont, yielding, what, a plus five or a plus six from Angel Cabrera. Like, that was cool, right? But I like watching, generally, a guy play really well, especially on a Sunday when he's got all the nerves, he's got a whole country behind him. The tournament is in Northern Ireland. There's such a history there, a political history that is so divisive and meaningful to people. It was great. And he was openly acknowledging it. And I loved watching him steel his nerves and play really well. I did. That was fun. But did you actually, like, see Shane Lowry in some of these shots? Like, when you see guys on their own social media, they're usually trying to find some of the best pictures of themselves, like the most flattering ones. The best pictures of Shane Lowry have his gut hanging over his belt while he is celebrating. Shane Lowry, man, if he is not the everyman build, you go to Giant Eagle today. You go anywhere today. You go to the, what, Best Buy, any store. You go to any coffee shop in this area, and you see a guy. There is like a 50% chance in Pittsburgh or any other major United States city that that person looks at least vaguely like Shane Lowry or has his build. One of the reasons, I think it's pretty well known too, that I'm an avowed Brooks Koepka fan. I now know what it's like to cheer for Tiger Woods when people would cheer hard for Tiger in his prime when he was like a cyborg destroying the sport. I never understood why people gravitated towards him because it felt like a foregone conclusion that he was going to win. But I now cheer for Koepka, who is built like a brick you-know-what, like does bicep curls on the final day of tournaments before he goes and plays usually. Is this workout freak who doesn't even like golf that much, it seems like, half the time. Basically, would rather be like playing a quote-unquote real sport. And I love watching him play because he usually just, He usually just humbles the field and the course, right? Even as a fan of that guy and what he's trying to chase down, and it wasn't like he was bad in this tournament, although just nobody was Shane Lowry good, it was weirdly gratifying to watch a dude who looks like he celebrated with about 10 pints and several donuts not only win, but dust the field. The only way it would have been better is if a guy who was much older than your normal winner had won it. And that brings me to the only time I've ever seen my dad give a crap about a sporting event, which was, I think, 09 at the Open, when Tom Watson was 59 or whatever. Might have even been 60 at the time, and should have won it, but lost, bogeyed the last hole and lost in a playoff to Stuart Sink. The only way that tournament could have been better is if a dude who was, on average, like 25 years older than most of the competitors had won it. But Shane Lowry having a beer gut, let's just call it what it is, having a beard that you imagine he gets food stuck in all the time, that he has beer foam stuck in. Shane, you've got something in your mustache. What is it, mate? You know, like, whatever. You know, that guy winning this tournament the way he did at that location was as good as it gets. It was a victory for all of us. None of us looks like Brooks Koepka. None of us, I mean, some of us do. None of us is like this flawless golf swing, emotionless, you know, void out there. We're Shane Lowry's. We are all Shane Lowry. Hell, some of us might even look better than him. I don't know. Golf is the one sport where you get this, I think. You don't see any, like, there's no John Daly playing tennis. You have to run too much. You're occasionally going to get a relief pitcher in baseball. You're Bartolo Colon's. This is like Bartolo Colon winning the Cy Young right now and winning World Series MVP. I'm trying to think if hockey's too much cardio. Basket, like in basketball, this would have been Oliver Miller or like the late Robert Tractor Trailer putting up a triple-double on average for an entire season, right? Golf's the only sport where I think you ever seen a guy that looks like Shane Lowry win a swimming competition, win the 100-meter free or the 400 free? No. Golf gives us this. You can write, in your right mind, stack yourself up physically to Shane Lowry and say, you know, if we weren't playing golf, I think I'd have a shot against him. If we were playing basketball or throwing a football, he might suck at it. It was a very dad-themed first hour of the show with a lot of this stuff. That was the ultimate dad moment. This segment brought to you by Pittsburgh's number one Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram dealer, ShorkyNorthHills.com. The top of the hour, Neil Huntington was, he was cagey about a man whose future with the Pirates is up in the air. And I would think up in the air for good reason. Neil Huntington said one thing pretty emphatically, but it was the quiet part that he added as an almost aside that I want to talk about at the top of the hour. And I'm going to tell you why the quiet part of what Neil Huntington said is the part that I hope other teams and I hope Neil Huntington himself is taking to heart. We'll talk about what he had to say. You'll hear what he had to say and about whom he had to say it or who coming up next on the PM team.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.